So we are holding on Huff Tess Umwood Bays, 10 lines from the end of the morning of emotion. We're holding Huff Tess Umwood Bays, 10 lines from the end of 10 lines from the end of the narrow lines. The line begins at 11. Huff Tess Umwood Bays, 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins 10 lines from the bottom of the narrow line, sorry. The line begins at Ilavaihu. About 2/3 of the way down the Umwood. Okay, we're in the middle of discussing the various kinds of foods that you can use for an Eruv Tchumen, and according to Rashi, also Eruv Chatzeres, as well as Shituf Mavoyis. We went through a bunch of different foods already. We established the general rule is in order to be able to use something for Eruv Tchumen or Shituf Mavoyis, it has to be food that's edible right now, meaning that it doesn't need to be cooked or whatever, and it has to be something, meaning if it's going to be cooked, it has to have been cooked already. You can't use it raw if it needs to be cooked, and it has to be something that in its current state, many people, not necessarily most people, but at least a substantial number of people are going to eat. Okay. So, and for each thing, the general rule also was that we need, if it's something that's eaten by itself, you need 2 meals worth of it. And if it's something that's eaten as a condiment together with bread or together with something else, then you need enough of it to have two meals worth of it, meaning what you would use of it during 2 meals. So for example, we mentioned, let's say, for example, cooked wine, which you use to dip bread into, or vinegar, which you use to dip vegetables into, where there you need the amount that you would used to dip the bread of 2 meals or the vegetables of 2 meals in. So now continuing on that topic. You also have, by the way, we also learned in the Gemara yesterday that you can actually have it combined together of a few different kinds of food, meaning you can have a little bit of some food and a little bit of other food, etc., as long as it adds up to 2 meals. Actually, the Rambam holds that applies both to Eruv Tchumen as well as to Shituf Mavoyis. The Ravid disagrees on that. The Ravid says that all of what the Gemara meant was, as far as Eruv Tchumen, sure, you can have various amounts of food, but Shituf Mavoyis, the whole point is you're supposed to be having everybody combined together to carry in the Mavoy, so you can't be combining it together out of different kinds of food. You have to have 2 meals worth of one kind of food for each person in the Mavoy, or eventually when you have enough people, then you don't need 2 meals worth for them anyway, as we'll discuss later on in the Masechta. Anyway, so again, 10 lines from the bottom of the from the end of the narrow lines on Huff Tess Umwood Bays, continuing on this topic of what you're allowed and not allowed to use for an Eruv Tchumen and what the amounts are. Tmorim Bekama. So how much, if you're going to use dates, how much do you need to use? Rav Yosef Tmorim Bekav. So Rav Yosef says you would need a kav of dates. We had earlier that the same thing would be as far as apples. You need a kav of apples. We talked about one possibility was we meant wild apples, maybe domesticated apples, you'd need less. But the other possibility, we said the Rashba had brought up a point that apples are not usually eaten as part of the meal. They're only eaten as a dessert, so they're less important. So in that case, dates might be similar based on that. But Amar Rav Yosef Mina Aminullah, Rav Yosef says, where do I get that from? Where do I have a proof that you need a kav of dates? So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, we have like this. We know that the Torah tells us that if a Zor eats Truma b'shoigig, then they have to pay back the koyin keren b'choymish. So they, and what they do is they don't actually pay back with money. If you ate, let's say, for example, $10 worth of truma, of apples of truma, you don't pay the koyin $10 plus an extra choymish, which would be $2.50. Instead, what you do is you give them $12.50 worth of fruit, of produce, and that becomes truma. So a braisa says, Tanya, ocho grogris v'shilim tmorim. Now, it has to be the same kind of produce that he ate. So he ate apples, and he has to pay back apples. So a braisa says, if he ate grogris, which were dried figs, v'shilim b'tmorim, and he paid back using fresh figs, tovay ala bracha, then may a bracha come on him. Now, we have to ask, says Rabbi Yosef, hey chidomi, what's the scenario where we're saying tovay ala bracha? Ilayim alofi domim, are we talking about that he's just going based on the actual value? The ochel minim zuzah v'kamashalim le bezuzah. So he ate a zuzah's worth of groigris of dried figs of truma, and now he's paying back with a zuz worth of fresh figs, my tovei ala bracha. So what's the tovei ala bracha? He did exactly what he's supposed to. Bezuz ha'ochal, bezuz ha'kamashalim. He ate a zuz worth, he's paying back a zuz worth. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to. Okay, actually, it would be a zuz and a quarter, but we're not getting into the chomish right now. The point still remains, though. In other words, that so what did he accomplish so great? That tovei ala bracha. A chomish is actually a quarter because it's called chomish milbar. What it is the fifth, chomish literally means a fifth, but it means it's going to be a fifth of the total amount you're paying. So if you ate $10 worth, you're paying $12.50, the $2.50 extra is one fifth of the entire payment. So we call it a chomish, even though mathematically nowadays we call it a quarter. Anyway, the point is that sort of Yosef is saying, so obviously the Tovei Ala Bracha can't just mean that if he paid back the exact amount he's supposed to, there's no Tovei Ala Bracha. Yeah, that's the Gemara's answer that way. Ela lav lafi midah. So it must be that we're talking about he decided to pay back not based on value, but based on weight. De'ocham in a griva de groigris. So he ate a griva, which is a measurement of groigris. V'shilim de'shab yezuzah, which a griva of groigris would be worth, let's say, only a zuz. V'kamashalim a griva de tamarim. Instead, he's paying back using an equal amount of fresh dates, de'shav yabah, which is worth four times as much, it's worth four zuz. V'katani tavay al bracha. And therefore, the Braisa is saying, tavay al bracha, but he's paying back with something that is much more valuable than what he ate to begin with. Alma tmore madifi. So you see from that dates are better than groigris, and therefore, now we learned on Omer Aleph, we learned yesterday that when you're giving fruit to it, when you're giving maisa oni to it, when you're giving maisa oni out to the poor people in your granary, in your storage area, we said there's a minimum amount you have to give of each kind of food to each oni in order that v'ochlu v'sharecha v'saveyu, they'll eat and they'll be satisfied. We said that if it was dried figs, you have to give them a calf. So fresh figs can't be more than a calf. Now, it could be less, but at least we can prove from this, says Rabbi Yosef, that it can't be more than a calf. However, the Gemara says, Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, that's not a solid proof. Maybe after all, the Braisa does mean that he ate a zuz's worth of groigris and he's paying back a zuz worth of fresh figs. So then why did he get a tovei ala bracha? Like you said, because they're fresh. Because he ate something which doesn't sell that well. Not as many people buy groigris because they'd rather buy fresh dates or fresh figs. And instead he's paying back with fresh dates, which are much more saleable. People are more eager to buy them. So maybe for that reason, tovei ala bracha. Nothing to do with amounts. Maybe in fact, based on what Rabbi Yosef is saying, based on value, what it would mean then is, he ate $10 worth of groigris, which is a pound. Instead, actually, if he's paying back with fresh figs, he's actually paying back less in volume. He's paying back a quarter of a pound, let's say. But that equals in value the groigris. So why tovei ala bracha? Because fresh dates are much more saleable. The Kohen, after all, has the ability, if he wants, to take the truma that he got and sell it to another Kohen. So therefore, we want to look out also for something for things that are saleable versus not. So therefore, we could say tovei ala bracha because of that. Because what we're saying is fresh figs are worth more than dried figs. So Rabbi Yosef was saying that the braisa on the face of it must mean that he's paying back the same amount and it's worth more. And its value is more, and Abaya is telling him not necessarily. It could be that he's paying back a smaller amount, which is worth an equal value. Okay, so you don't have a solid proof one way or the other, but nevertheless, okay, since we don't have a proof to the contrary, then it's left at that. So fresh dates are going to be a calf. Okay, next shesisa. What about if a person uses shesisa for the Eruv Tchumen? Shesisa is, Rashi describes, and we've had it before in the Gemara, it comes up in Brachas and in Shabbos. They take grain that was toasted in the oven, then they grind it up and make flour out of it. So the flour itself already has a naturally sweet taste, and then they mix it with honey and with some other ingredients, and they have a drink. They have a drink or a pudding or something called shisisa. So how much of that would you need? Omer of Ahava Pinchas Trei Shagushi, 2 spoonfuls of it would be enough for an Erev Chomen. It could be spoons like the kind we're familiar with, like teaspoons or tablespoons. Could be something more like ladles, whatever it is, some standard size spoon that they had in those days. Next, what about kisoni? What about the actual dried, toasted grain itself? I'm going to buy a tray buni de pumbedisa. 2 buni of pumbedisa. Buni, Rashi says, means measurements. Rashi says a buni means a measurement. There's a Gemara in Gittin, which lists a bunch of medicinal recipes, and the Gemara mentions over there Buna in a certain connection, and Rashi there explains it means a handful, so maybe Buni de Pumbedisa also over here means handful, the standard handful of Pumbedisa, or maybe not, maybe it just means some other measure. Okay. Next. Amar Abaya, so since we're mentioning this toasted grain, this dried toasted grain, so the Gemara digresses a second. Amar Abaya, Amar Li Aim. So Abaya says, my mother told me, which means his foster mother. The Gemara in Kedushin tells us his mother passed away in childbirth, but throughout Shas we have many different things that his foster mother told him, advice, medical advice, and whatever. We had it in Shabbos. So my mother, or my foster mother, told me, Hani kisoni maulo liliba, this toasted grain is good for your heart, umavakli machshavta, and it takes away worries. I guess you could say, sort of like nowadays, you eat popcorn, you can't be worrying while you're eating popcorn. So I guess maybe it's similar to that. But Amar Abaya, Amar Li Aim. Also, Abaya says, my mother told me, Hai man de isle chulsha de liba, a person who has a weak heart. So it could be literally a weak heart. It could be that he has worries, whatever. Anyway, Laisi bisra de atma yamina de dichra, he should take the meat of the right thigh of a ram. The Laisi kavuya de reisa de nisan, then also he should take the animal dung that an animal that pastures out in the fields, that the dung was deposited in Nissen, davka in Nissen, in other words. The eleka kavuya d'reisa, if you can't find that dung from an animal that pastured, lesi subyoni d'arvasa, then instead what you should do is take thin branches of arava. Anyway, either way, you take the dung or the thin branches, v'nich kabave, you burn them to make charcoal out of them, and you use that charcoal to roast the meat that you got. We said the meat from the right thigh of a ram. So you use this to roast that. The nechel, and then you eat from that meat. The nishke basre chamra marka, and then afterwards drink diluted wine. And that'll help take away this chulsha de liba. That'll help take away this weakness of heart. Okay. Yeah, ram meat exists, sure. Yeah, think of it, for example, you have certain korbanos have to be rams, right? Okay, nowadays, I don't know if they sell it commonly, but, I don't know if they sell it commonly, maybe in Middle Eastern food stores or something, I don't know. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's true, you'd have to go collect it. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. Amr of Yehuda Amashmo, Kol Shul Liftan, the general rule is, anything which is used as a condiment or an accompaniment together with bread, then the rule, then the amount of it you need for Erev Tchumen is kedei lechol boy, is the amount that you would need to eat together with the bread of 2 meals. And kol she'eni lifton, anything that's not a condiment, something that you eat by itself, kedei lechol haymenu, then you would need 2 meals worth of the thing itself. So, for example, basar chai, if you're going to make an eruv using raw meat, so it's not liftan, because you don't eat it together with bread, therefore, kedei lechol haymenu, therefore you would need enough of it to be able to eat, therefore you need enough of it to be able to eat 2 meals worth of the meat itself. Now, what do we mean basar chai? On the face of it, you don't eat raw meat. So you have a couple of Rishonim talk about different possibilities with it. The Rashba, the Ritva, others talk about a couple of possibilities. Maybe one possibility is we mean over here, meat that's dried and salted, so kind of like beef jerky. So it wasn't cooked, but because it's salted, it's edible. It's edible raw. Another possibility is that maybe chai over here doesn't mean completely raw. It means rare. It means half cooked. So that's edible. Yeah, like the way Ben Machaban Dursoy, for example. Yeah, something like that. And Bosset Sully, what about roasted meat? So then if we say that chai means half roasted, then Sully would mean fully roasted. So then what's the amount for that? Rabba Amakadeh Lechel, Boivir of Yosef Amakadeh Lechel Haymen. So here you have a machlokas, whether it would be. In other words, basically the machlokas is meat something that you would commonly eat by itself for a meal, or is it something that you would only eat together with bread? So if we say you only eat it together with bread, then you need less of it, because then you only need the amount that you would eat together with two meals worth of bread. If you say that you eat it by itself, then you would need two meals of it itself. So Rabbi Yosef, so Rabba is more machmir. He says Rabba is more mekel, and says that you just need the amount that you would eat with two meals of bread. And Rabbi Yosef says you need two meals worth of the meat itself. Amar Rabbi Yosef menam min Allah. So Rabbi Yosef says, where do I get that from? That meat is something that you eat by itself. Dahani parsohi achli tavhaki b'lainama. Because we see that the Persians eat pieces of meat without bread. They eat like nowadays, every person has a good steak or something. So the Persians in those days would do that also. So we see that meat is something that you can make a meal of by itself. Okay, so nowadays, it's true. Nowadays, some of these dinim might be slightly different. It's true. Okay. Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says to him, so what? Or Parsoi Habaruba Dalma? So what? Are the Persians most of the people in the world? Now, fine. The other day, when we talked about choses, we said that even in Bavel itself, you can't use choses, we said, with wheatgrass. We said that even though that some people eat it in Bavel, we would say, Botla Daita Etzakol Adam. Here, we're not going to say that Botla Daita. We can say, fine, the Persians themselves, a Yid who lives in Persia, where they eat meat by itself, is able to use meat by itself for his Eid of Chatzeres, and the amount would be two meals worth. But everywhere else, why should they be bound by what the Persians do? The difference is, also we talked about the other day, a lot of it depends on what the circumstances are. In Persia, they had a lot of meat available to them, therefore it was common for them to eat it without bread, which then that might be the case today, nowadays also, where you can easily buy meat in the store and it's relatively cheap. In Iowa and postal, it'd be even more so, I guess, yeah. But the point is, as opposed to choses, I mean, grain grows everywhere, but in most places they still don't eat it as unripe grain. So therefore we can say butladaitum. Here we can say maybe if there were other places where they had meat as much as they do in Persia, then maybe they would eat it also without bread. But the fact is they don't. So we can say, fine, in Persia they could make an eruv that way, but why would that apply everywhere else in the world? V'hotnan, we learn in a Mishnah, in connection with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, digdei aniyim la'aniyim, a piece of cloth that's suitable for a poor person is mekabel tumah for a poor person. That means a piece of 3x3 etzbois, less than 3x3. We learned in Masechta Shabbos, is not even a poor person is not going to bother keeping that around because it's too small to even use for a patch for his clothing. But 3x3 etzbois would be mekabel tumah. Digdei ashirim la'ashirim. On the other hand, when it comes to rich people's clothes, then you need 3x3 tefachim, because less than that, a rich person doesn't bother holding on to. Aval bigdei ashirim la'aniyim loy. But the implication is that you don't need for a poor person, we wouldn't say that's not makabel tumah until it's 3x3 tefachim. Because we go according to how it is in each place and by each person. So the poor person will use a piece 3x3 etzbois, so for him it's makabel tumah. For a rich person, not. So the same thing again. For the Persians, meat may be something that you eat by itself. Therefore, for them, you would say you have to use two full meals worth of it. But for everybody else, we should go like Rabba and say that you only need the amount that you would eat together with two meals of bread. Yeah, so v'chitema hocha l'chumra v'hocha l'chumra. So you're going to say, okay, maybe what it is in each case we're going l'chumra. Maybe what it is when it comes to the cloth, we're going to say we go according, for the poor person, we go according to his standard, 3x3 etzbois, which results in a chumra. Here you're going to say that we go according, that we take the Persian standard and apply it to everywhere else, also l'chumra. The problem with that is, who says that we go l'chumra? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, Rav Shimon Elazar, ma'arvin l'chola ulazokin kedem ezonai. Now, all this time, we've been talking about 2 meals worth of food, but we have to realize different people eat different amounts by a meal. So how do we do it? So Rav Shimon Elazar says, when it comes to a sick person or an old person who are not able to eat as much, then you make an eruv for them kedem ezonai, based on the amount that they would eat for 2 meals, which comes out, therefore, less than for most people. Or the ravton, on the other hand, for a person who is very hungry and eats more than the usual, for him you use besuda beninus shalakadam. For him you go based on the average suda of the regular person. So we see, in other words, that you don't always go. So we see that you don't go l'chumra. You go l'kula. In both cases, you go in l'kula. You're saying it's 2 normal meals or the amount this person will eat for 2 meals, whichever is less. So just the opposite, we go l'kula. Okay, kasha. Okay, it's a kasha on Rabbi Yosef. Fine, it's not a stira. But it is a kasha. Why Rabbi Yosef would be saying that we go l'chumra? Well, they might. They're an old person or a sick person. It's true. They're not able to eat as much. They still may need. Well, they might. I mean, you know, 2,000 amos is, it's a little over half a mile. You have old people now. You have old people to walk further than that. Yeah. Okay. It's fine. Okay, the question is, now let's analyze that business about going according to the person's own standard, where Rav Shimon Elazar is saying you go according to the person's own standard if they eat less. So, Umi Amar Rav Shimon Elazar Hachi, did Rav Shimon Elazar really say that? V'hatanya, Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, the same Rav Shimon Elazar says, in connection with a different din in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Now, you have like this. If you have a mess inside a house, then we know obviously the mess is metame, and everything that's inside the house under the same roof with the mess becomes tame. You also have a concept that the doorways of the house are going to be metame as well. So if a person stands in one of those doorways, even though the door is closed, they're still makabel tuma. They still become tame mess. Unless we have, and the reason is because ultimately they're going to have to take out the mess through one of those doors. So you have, there's a few different ways in which a certain door in which you can have that one door is the one that's metame the person and all the other ones are not. You have a few different ways. One of them is if one of them is open and the other ones are closed. Another one is, which we're going to focus on over here, is if one of them is wide enough to take out the mess and the other ones are not. Another one is if you had a machshava to take it out through a particular one. So here we're going to focus on the one where one of the doors is wide enough and the other ones are not. So the normal amount is, we usually say that the minimum width of the door for a person to be tamei standing in that doorway is 4 tefachim. Because 4 tefachim is the amount that you could get the average mess out of the house through a door that size. You might have to turn them on the side, but you could get them out. So, if you have an Oig Melech HaBoshen is dead inside the house, we don't literally mean Oig Melech HaBoshen, we mean just, in other words, a very large person. Although there is an interesting idea that I saw, that given that we say that Oig was a member of Avraham's household, and we know that Avraham had made a bris milah for everybody in his household, so there is actually the possibility that Oig was like that also, in which case Oig himself might to a certain extent have the din of a yid. Anyway, the point is, B'pashtus, though, we're just talking about somebody who's very large, like Oig, and we say about him, Pischoi Barba. The size of the door, which if that one door, if you had machshava about that door, or that one door is open or whatever, would be 4 tefachim, even though you can't get Oig Melech HaBoshan out in a door that size. So you see, you don't go according to the person, you just go according to a standard thing. So why all of a sudden here by Eruv is Rav Shimon Elazar saying that you go according to the person himself, and if he's old or whatever, then you need less food for him? So the Gemara answers Abaya. So what would Abaya answer to that? Now, why are we asking on Abaya? What does Abaya have to do with it? Marshall says, because Abaya is the one who brought the Braisa in the first place. We had at the bottom of the previous Amud, Abaya was the one who pointed out, or the Persians Ruba Dalma, and that brought us into this whole into this whole discussion. So apparently he's also the one who brought in the Breiser about Ma'av and L'cholo L'zaken. So therefore we need him to give an answer. So the answer is Hossam, because he would say the case of the mess is a special case. Hossam heichil oved. Because after all, what are you supposed to do in the case of the mess? Hadumi nehadme v'napke. Are we supposed to cut him up into pieces and then take him out? Obviously you can't do that. So therefore, in other words, there's no choice. We have to have a door that's big enough to get him out of. So of necessity, we're gonna anyway have to break open one of the doors, because no matter how you get it, you're not gonna get Oig Melech HaBashan out through a door for Tfachim anyway, but you're not gonna be able to get him out any of the doorways. You're anyway gonna need to break open a doorway or whatever. So if you have one door, which is four tefachim wide, then we're gonna go based on that one. We have to figure out, right? So now we have the question. We're saying Rav Shimon ben Elazar says that Oig Melech HaBashan, Rav Shimon ben Elazar is saying Pischa Kimeloyai. He's saying that the door is not, that the size is not for Tvachim. It depends on the size of the person. So Abaye is saying, of course it has to depend on the size of the person. Because how else? You can't physically get him out through a smaller door. But in the case of an Eruv, where you don't have that consideration, yeah, you can say you go according to the shear of the person. Sorry, what I was saying about the size of the door, about four tefachim, is about the next thing in the Gemara, about the Rabbanan, about Rabbi Yochanan and the Rabbanan, yeah. But according to Rabbi Shimon Elazar, yeah, Pischei Kimeloyai, because Abaye is saying, because there's no choice over there, you can't cut up the mess, so therefore, of necessity, you have to have a door that's wide enough to carry him out, and if it's too narrow to carry him out, then it can't be that a person standing in that doorway is going to become Tomei. That's no proof from there to Eruv. Okay, so Iboilahu. We said Rav Shimon ben Elazar says that Oig Melech HaBashan, you need a doorway wide enough to take him out for that doorway to be metame the person. And by the way, let's keep in mind, the idea is, even according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, if all the doorways are narrower than that, then all of them are going to be metame, because then, yeah, you're going to have to get out the mess somehow, so of necessity, you're going to have to break open a door, and it might as well be one door as another. The question is, if you have this one doorway which is wide enough to carry him out, and all the other ones are not, so Rav Shimon ben Elazar is saying only that doorway will be metame. All the other ones will not. We're talking about a person standing in one of these doorways. So right, if a person was inside the house, he's talking no matter what. We're talking about a person comes from the outside and stands in one of these doorways. He stands, let's say, under the door. Even the door is closed, but the fact that it's wide enough and he has makshava. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, pligi rabbanan alei de Rav Shimon Elazar oiloi. Do the other chachamim disagree with Rav Shimon Elazar? We said Rav Shimon Elazar says this about Oig Melech HaBashan pischei kimeloyai. What do the other chachamim say? The answer is Toshma, the Omer Rabba Babachana Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Oig Melech HaBashan Pischei Barba. Rabba Babachana says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that even if it's Oig Melech HaBashan, the door only needs to be four tefachim wide. And that one, again, would be Masil. Once you have a door four tefachim wide and you have in mind to take him out through that, then it'll be Masil. It saves all the other doors from being Matamea person who's underneath them. Now, Rabbi Yechanan being an Amora can't argue with Rabbi Shimon Elazar, who's a Tana, so it must be that Rabbi Yechanan knew that the Chachamim disagreed with Rav Shimon ben Elazar, and therefore he's going according to them. However, the Gemara says that's not necessarily a proof. Because we could be talking about Rabbi Yechanan's case, could be talking about where you have many smaller doors, the Ikachad the Haviarba, then you have one door which is four tefachim wide. Now, the fact is, again, you can't cut up the mess to carry him out. So therefore, necessarily, you're going to have to break open one door. Devadek, ki kamarvach, bahu kamarvach. So if you're going to break open a door, you're going to start with the widest one and then work from there. So therefore, we can say that one would be matzil. But if, let's say, for example, all of them were four tefachim wide, or all of them, Rashi says, let's say all of them are 10 amas wide, then you don't know which one. So now, even if a 10 amas wide door doorway is not going to be enough to fit to get the body out. The fact is, you're going to have to break open some doorway, and there's no reason to think it's one versus the other. So if you have in mind, so that's the thing. So Rashi explains like this: if you have one or more doorways which are as is wide enough to get the mess out, then fine. Once you have a machshava to take the mess out through that one, or once that one is open and the rest of them are closed, then fine. That one is matame and the rest are not. But here, if we have, let's say, all the doorways are 10 amos wide, but the mess is wider than ten amos, and therefore you can't fit them out even through such a doorway, then necessarily you're going to need to break one of the doorways, and there's no reason to think that it should be one doorway more than another, so even a machshava, or even having one of them open and the other one's closed, is not going to help us. But Rabbi Yochanan would be talking about where you have, there's one of them that's 4 tefachim wide, which is an amount necessary for a normal mess, and then you have, and all the other ones are even narrower than that. So therefore, we can say that you're going to break open the widest one. By the way, it's very possible also, I mean, we usually say in Shas that a person takes up a space of an amma. First of all, I suppose it could be that a mess is a little bit smaller, because you can sort of squeeze them out through the door. But also, if you have a door that's 4 tefachim wide, it has a diagonal, which is a little bit wider. So maybe what it is you can carry out the mess like on a diagonal, and therefore, you'd have enough room to get it out through a 4 tefach door. Okay. Yeah. All right. Getting back to Eruv, Amar of Chia Barav Ashi Amar Rav, Ma'arvin Bebosuchai. Okay, so you're able to make an Eruv using raw meat. So again, we said maybe raw, but maybe it doesn't mean completely raw. Maybe it means only half cooked, or maybe it means heavily salted and therefore edible as is. The Korban Nisanal actually wants to say that maybe it does actually mean raw meat. We learned in Shabbos that there are certain kinds of meat that are edible raw. Okay. Fine. Amar of Shimi Bachia, Ma'arvin Bebeitzim Chayis. Here's another din. You're allowed to make an Eid of Tchumen using raw eggs. Now, the point is, because raw eggs, people sometimes eat raw eggs as is. Okay, maybe nowadays it's less common because of salmonella, but in principle you could. You could eat raw eggs. It's not considered batla daitam because enough people eat them that way. Chazanim, for example, do it to improve their voice. Yeah. The kama, okay, so how many eggs would you need? Omer of Nachman Yitzchok Achas, so Rav Nachman Yitzchok says you need only one, but Sinai Omer Shtayim. Sinai says you need two. Who is Sinai? Is Rabbi Yosef. We have it at the end of Brachas and at the end of Horius that Rabbi Yosef is called Sinai versus Rabbah was Oikar Horim. Whereas Rabbah was Oikar Horim because Rabbi Yosef was an expert, like the way it was given and how Sinai in all the Mishnayos and Braises. There's an interesting vote from the Tavoris Shur who says, so why particularly are we calling Rabbi Yosef Sinai over here? There's one other place in Shas, in Moed Cotton, there's also a din that brings from Rabbi Yosef, and we call him Sinai. But he focuses, why over here are we calling him Sinai? And he says like this, because the Gemara tells us in Psochim about there's a concept called Zugois, that you're not supposed to have two of the same kind of food or the same kind of drink together, because it puts a person in danger of shading or whatever. The Gemara discusses over there, so how do we have Dalad Koisis on Pesach? So one answer is that when you're doing it for a Dvar Mitzvah, then it's not a problem, because Shrema Mitzvah lo yada davara. Now Rabbi Yosef learns, we're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that you can only make an Eruv Tchumen for Dvar Mitzvah. You can't just make it if you stand want to walk from here to the next, from one bungalow colony to the next to meet your friend. You can only do it if you're going, let's say, to hear the Rav's Drasha, or to do Bikul Cholim, or Nicham Avelim, or what have you. So now the Gemara over there in Pesachim mentions that it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, this matter of Zugus. So the question is, how do you go against that and say two eggs? Only Rabbi Yosef, who is Sinai, who is expert in all the ins and outs of halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, he could say that you use two eggs. So it's a nice vote, although a couple of Achronim ask on it, that the whole point is we're saying you're supposed to have two because you need two meals worth. So you wouldn't be eating them necessarily at the same time anyway. You'd be eating one meal earlier on Shabbos and one meal later on Shabbos. There's no problem of Zugas with that. So what's even the Havam in anyway? No. It means two eggs. It means two eggs total. It means one egg for one meal and one egg for the other meal. Because the idea is, again, based on the rule we said before, eggs are usually not something that you eat by themselves. Eggs are usually something, you're eating a meal of bread, you eat an egg together with it. So therefore, we say that's the amount that you would eat, so it's less because you only need the amount that you would eat with one meal of bread, right? Well, so actually, So actually, you're asking in general, what do we do as far as Zugis nowadays? The truth is, the Gemara ends up saying over there that anyone who's not Machbed on it, then the Shadim aren't Machbed on him either. Nowadays, in general, we're not Machbed on it, so in general, there's not a problem. Yeah, the Shadim were pushed away at various times, yeah. Okay. I don't know, it's a good question. The spilling the water, which the Gemara mentions in Cholin is because of Shadim, is the one shed, that's the one minhag related to Shadim that I know of that we do now. That you spill out a little tiny bit of water. No, it's not from the worms. No, the Gemara in Cholin tells that Abaya says over there that I used to think it was because you have little floating things in the water and this way you're pouring them off. And then my Rebbe told me, I think it's Rabba, that it's because of Shadim. So why we keep that one and we don't keep any of the other shit? Okay, let's go on. Okay, so now we're done. So we're done for now with the matter of what. So we're done with what kinds of foods you can and can't use for Eruv. So again, we have the general principle that we have so far. It has to be food that's edible as is. It has to be that as it is, a certain number, a respectable number of people will eat it. And then once it is, then you have two meals worth of it if you're eating it by itself, or the amount that would accompany two meals if it's something that's not usually eaten by itself. Now, we said in the Mishnah, HaNodim in HaMozen Mutter B'mayim Chola, we said if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat mozen, then he's not allowed to eat anything except for water and salt. Because we said the same way as an Eruv, we said you can't make an Eruv with water or salt. So the same thing, when it comes to the same thing, the Mishnah mentioned, as far as Nedarim, also the definition is the same. Water and salt are not considered mozen, everything else is. So that's the question. So you're telling me only water and salt are not considered mazon. Apparently the idea is everything else is. In which case would it mean that our Mishnah is a contradiction on Rav and Shmuel? They say that you only say mizonis on the chameshas aminim, the five things that are called grain in halacha, wheat, barley, spelt, rye, and oats. We see over here from our Mishnah that other things are also considered mazon, so you should be saying mizonis on other things as well. Okay, so the Gemara says, so what's the problem? And in Brachas, when we discussed that, we already pointed out a contradiction against Rav and Shmuel based on a different Brisa, where we said over there that there's actually also, there's also Oiras, we say Boromina Mizonasan. So the Velt understands that Oiras is rice, because many Rishonim learn that Oiras is rice, and therefore they say Mizonasan rice. We say, the Alter Rebbe writes that there's a suffix about it, because the Gemara also mentions another plant over there called Doichan, and Rashi over there defines Oiras as millet, and Doichan as some other species of millet. So it's not so certain that Oiras means rice, so the Velt says Mizonasan rice. We say that you only eat rice within a meal of bread, and if not, then you say you eat three different things with different brachas, whatever. Anyway, the point is that we see, so the Gemara slogged up Rav and Shmuel and said Mizonas is not limited exclusively to the Chameshas Aminim. You have other things, in particular rice, where you make Mizonas on it. So we already slogged them up. So what's the problem if our Mishnah slogs them up as well? Okay, the Gemara says, fine. Okay, can we say that we can also slog them up from our Mishnah? Which would mean, in other words, let's say we were to continue that discussion, and fine, let's say that the Brisa that we quoted over there about Oiras and Doichan is mistaken. So then we would say, because not all Brisas are always 100% accurate, so then we would say, okay, well, then Rav and Shmuel might be right after all. Then we could bring our Mishnah to slog them up. The answer is no. The answer is no. Amar of Huna, our Mishnah is not a stira to them because ba'omer kol hazon alai. Because the case of our Mishnah, you have to explain the Mishnah a little bit. It doesn't mean when it says I'm nodim and I'm mazon, he didn't actually say I'm making a neder not to eat mazon. It's true. If he made a neder not to eat mazon, all he would be also in is the chameshes aminim and maybe also rice. But here he made a neder, I'm not going to eat anything hazon, anything which sustains and satisfies a person. Well, then anything else, yeah, that's a wider category. It includes anything else that fills up a person or that's nutritious. So therefore, it includes anything except for water or salt. Okay. So the question is, mayim u'melach u'delai zayni. So you're saying water or salt do not satisfy a person or are not nutritious. Well, in this case, we didn't say how long he made this nether for. He could just say a nether that I'm not going to do this today. It's not an impossible nether, but yeah. Right. If you were to say I'm not going to, if you were to say I'm not going to eat anything hazon for a week, yeah, that might be a shavua shav. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, so okay, you're telling me water and salt don't fill up a person, don't satisfy a person, implying that everything else does, but how could that be? This is another thing that we learned in Brachos. When we Tamidim would follow Rabbi Yechanan, when he went to eat fruit from Ginoisar, Ginoisar is the area around Kinneret, is a certain area around the Kinneret in the north of Eretz Yisrael. The fruit over there was very, very high quality and very delicious. So Rabbi Yochanan would go sometimes over there in order to eat that fruit. Ki havinan bemeya. So Rabbi Abachana says, if there were 100 of us talmidim going along, havaman katinan lachochad b'chad asora asora, each of us would pick 10 fruits, so we'd have a total of 1,000. Ki havinan beasora, and if there were only 10 of us, havaman katinan lachochad b'chad meya meya, then each one of us would collect 100. So either way, in other words, we have 1,000 fruits total that we would collect. Well, then all the Talmidim together are carrying them. Every 100, those fruits were so large that 100 of them would not fit into a basket that holds 3 saw. Now, a saw is about 20 pounds, so you're talking 3 saw is about 60 pounds, so 100 of these fruits would not even fit in a basket that size, because they were larger than that. Yeah. And v'hava ochel lo l'kulayim, Rabbi Yochanan would eat all 1,000 fruits that we got him. V'omer, and afterwards he would say, shvu'asa b'laitoyim lizviyuna, I swear that I haven't tasted anything, that I haven't filled up. I'm still hungry, even after eating all that fruit. So we see that fruit is also not zoyin, it doesn't fill a person up. The answer is ema mizoyna. The answer is, again, we're going to sort of change what Rabbi Yochanan said, the opposite way of what we did. In our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, it said mazon, and we explained it to mean hazon. Here, with Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to say it the other way around. He said ziyuna, which implies anything that fills a person up, but really what he meant was mazona. Really what he meant was mazona, namely things that actually satisfy a person in a large amount, that actually satisfy a person, which is what we think of as mazonas, things from chameshes aminim. So, well, it could be a guzma. It could be a guzma. I mean, the point is that we do find in other places in Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan had a big capacity for being able to eat. And the point is, here it wasn't just any old food. It was Peiros Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yochanan in particular, we find in various Gemaras is always looking out to say the best things about Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, maybe Taka he exerted himself to eat all these fruits in order that he should be able to enjoy Eretz Yisrael as much as possible. Okay. Why he would have to swear? It's a good question. I guess the point was, you would think after eating that many fruits, he would have been full, but he's saying that nevertheless, I still didn't eat anything that filled me up. But why Taki is swearing about it? It's a good question. I don't know. All right. Okay. Talking further about this matter of Shavuos. So now we mentioned the matter of a neder in our Mishnah. Hello, in connect just as a side thing, because we're mentioning that you can't make an eruv with water or salt. So we're saying also a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat anything hazon. Then the only thing he can eat is water and salt. But now let's talk about a more direct connection between a neder and an eruv. What if a person makes a neder not to eat something? Can he use it for an eruv? So that's the thing. So what we're saying is the fruit that Rabbi Yochanan ate would be considered zon. It wouldn't be considered mazon, because mazon specifically means chameshes aminim. Okay. So Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, shvuah shaloi oichol kikozu. If a person makes a shvuah that I won't eat this loaf of bread, ma'arvin loyba, you're still able to make an eruv tchumin for him using that bread.
Kikov zoo alive, but on the other hand, if he says this bread is also to me, then ein ma'avin loyba, then you can't make an eruv for him.
The difference is, in general, you have the difference between a neder and a shvua. A shvua is the person themselves is asking themselves something. I won't do such and such. As opposed to a neder is this thing, the neder goes on the chefza, the shvua goes on the gavra. So the person himself said, I'm not going to eat this. Then fine, it means I'm not going to eat it, but I can have other hanois from it. But if he says kik or zu alai, then it means that he's asking himself every kind of hanah from it.
So therefore, so it would be also to make, so it would be also to make an eruv for him with it. So Tosfos actually mentions over here that there is a kind of neder called a koinam, where you say that this thing should be like a korban to me. So therefore, it's similar to hekdesh, and we're going to learn in the sugya over here that where you made a hekdesh, then you can't use it for an eruv. Okay, so the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction on Rav Huna. A brisa says, Hanodim and Akikim Arvin Loi Ba. A person makes a neder about a loaf of bread, you can make an eruv for him with it. My lavda omra alai. Now, neder usually means where he says, this bread is also to me, and we still see that you can make an eruv with him on, with using it, not like Rav Huna says. The answer is, okay. The answer is, Loi da omra zu. No, it means that he made a shvua. This bread is also, this bread, I won't eat this bread. And now, even though the Braisi used the word anoder, you have sometimes the word neder and shvua are used a little more loosely. Loshen many adam, and sometimes they use the word neder when they mean shvua and vice versa. So the Braisi could mean that he made a shvua. Okay, so the question is, in fact, it must be logical to say that the Braisa is talking about a case where he said, I won't eat this bread. In other words, it's an issu gavra, the issu is on him, not on the bread. The katoni is safer because the next part of the Braisa continues, Emasai, when do we say that he can use it for an eruv? Vizman sha'ama shvua shaloi etamena, if he says a shvua that I won't taste it. So again, I won't taste it, fine, but that means he could use it for other things. Aval oma, so that implies, so that implies that the first part of the braisa is talking about where he said that I won't taste it, which is a shvua that I won't do such and such, implying therefore that he can do other things with it. Okay, the question is Aval Omar Olai Mai. So what do you mean? So if he makes a neder that it's also a lie, meaning that it itself is also to me for any purpose, Mai, what would you say? Hochinami de ma'avin loiba. Would you say that indeed you can't make an eruv for him with it? Because that would imply that it's also to him for all purposes. Then if so, Adetoni, what about then the Braisa goes on to say a case, Kikerzu Hektish Ein Ma'arvin Leiba, the Braisa goes on to say that if he declared the bread to be Hektish, then you can't make an Eruv for him with it, Lefisha Ein Ma'arvin Behektishus, because you can't make an Eruv with Hektish, because you can't make an Eruv with Hektish, because Hektish is completely off limits for any kind of Hana. So if you're going to say that there's actually a case, even when it's not hektish, where it's also to make an eruv with it, namely where he said a lie, lifleg v'listi b'didei, then the braisa could have made a distinction without even bringing in hektish. The braisa could have made a distinction within a neder or shvur itself. Ba'med v'ram amurim d'oma zu, aval omer a lie ein ma'arvin leiba, that if he says, hare zu, now, if he says harizu, then he would be that this is also to me. That this is also to me. So in other words, the focus is on the me. Then it would be he'd be able to use it for an eruv because again, he himself can't eat it, but other people can, and he himself can have hanav made of other kinds. So which includes the hanav making an eruv. Whereas if he says a lie, meaning that he makes a neder, then it would be completely off limits to him, and then it would be also. If you're going to tell me that if he says a lie, then it's also. Then why didn't the Braisa make that distinction instead of mentioning the case of Hektish? No. It's not that Olai includes his family. The point is that Olai, that Hare Zu Olai, means that it's completely also to him in any way. Now, but the question is that then the Braisa should have made that distinction. The fact that the Braisa does not make that distinction seems to show that even when he says Harezu Olai, he only means to ask her the normal way of using this bread, namely to eat it, but not other kinds of hanas. So what is Rav Huna telling us that if he says Harezu Olai, then he can't use it? The answer is Omalach Rav Huna. The answer is Rav Huna can answer you, Elamai. So what are you going to say? So you're asking the question. In other words, you're thinking that the Braisa, the fact that it didn't make that distinction, shows that even if you say Harezu Alai, you could use it. But Elamai, so what are you thinking then? Kol Hecha D'Oma Alai Ma'arvin. So you're telling me that if he says Alai, you're still able to use it for an Eruv. Kasha Reisha. Okay, but don't you have then a Kasha from the beginning of the Braisa? Because after all, we said the Braisa, earlier in the Braisa, it says, if he says shvur shaloy etamena, if he says a shvur that I won't taste it, then you're able to use it for an eruv, implying, but if he said a shvur that I won't, that it's also a lie, then it would be also. So that first part of the Braisa seems to imply like what I'm saying. So where Rav Huna would say that there's a difference between whether you said a shvur that I won't eat it versus a shvur that it's also completely to me. So obviously, you're chasuri mechsura. So therefore, the braisa must be missing words. Bahochi katoni, the braisa must mean to say like this. You make a neder that you're not going to have a loaf of bread. You're still able to make an eruv with it because it's only asur, the main kind of hana, because you mean to asur the eating of it, but not the other kinds of things of it. The fact, by the way, that you yourself can't eat it doesn't matter because, as we learned in the Mishnah, and as we're going to discuss on Amud Beis, even if you personally can't eat something that, according to the Chachamim, that doesn't matter because another person could eat it. That's why we said, for example, you can make for a nazir, you can make an eruv using wine. So the Braisa would say, and the Braisa would be implying, even if he doesn't make a shavua, shaloi etamena, even if he says that it's also a lie, which should mean that's also completely, still, nasakoima, shavua, shaloi etamena, nevertheless, it would be the equivalent of saying a shavua that I won't taste it, and he's still able to use it for an eruv, because again, shavua, a lie, if he says a lie, then it would be the equivalent of saying shvur shaloy etamena. That's the thing. The fact that he himself can't eat it doesn't matter. The fact is he still means to only answer the normal way of using it. And therefore, so to use an eruv, to make it for an eruv, is not the normal way of using it. The normal thing to do with a loaf of bread is to eat it. He'd be allowed to use it for other purposes, including for an eruv. That's the thing. The eruv is supposed to be something that you can eat, but it doesn't have to be that you personally can eat it. That's what we said, that you can make an eruv for a nazir using wine, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, even though he personally can't drink the wine, because other people could. Okay. Even if the person says a lie, he still has only in mind that he's only going to be asking it for him derech hana. Okay, the question is, we call Malcolm Kasha Rav Huna. Okay, but we're still left with a Kasha on Rav Huna, because he says that if you say a lie, then you can't use it for an Eruv. And here we're saying that the Braisa is implying that you could. The answer is, Huda Amar Kerab Eliezer. The answer is because Rav Huna can't argue with a Braisa, but Rav Huna can go according to the opinion of Rav Eliezer, and Rav Eliezer is a Tana, and therefore Rav Huna can follow his opinion. The Tana, Rav Eliezer, I'm a shvur shalai echol kikar zu. If a person says a shvur that I won't eat this bread, ma'arvin loyba, then you could make an eruv for him with it. But kikuzu a lie, ain't ma'arvin loyba. But if he says kikuzu a lie, then he can't, which is exactly what Rav Huna is saying. So good, so Rav Huna has a Tana that he can base himself on, so he's entitled to follow the opinion of that Tana. Rashi, by the way, brings over here a second explanation about the difference between a lie and not, is we have a concept called mitzvah slav lahonis. You're doing something for the sake of a mitzvah. We don't care about any hana that you're getting in it, because the mitzvah itself is not given for hana, it's just given, it's gzeiras melech. Hashem said you do the mitzvah, and you have to do the mitzvah whether you like it or not. It comes up actually in connection with Rosh Hashanah. For example, the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah, let's say a person made a neder that he's not going to listen and enjoy the sound of a shofar, he's still able to hear the tkiyas that you have to hear on Rosh Hashanah, because that mitzvah is lav honest nivnu. So here we have another example of it. Again, if we say, as we're going to learn tomorrow, that you can make an eruv tchumen only for a dvar mitzvah, well then, in that case, so mitzvah is lav honest nivnu, so we don't care, so we don't care about the fact that he made a neder on it. On the other hand, if he made it hektish, or according to Rabbi Eliezer, if he said a lie, then already it's not a matter of mitzvah slav lahonis nifnu, then you have it's completely off limits to him. So the question is, me amar Rabbi Eliezer hachi? Okay, but now we have to ask, did Rabbi Eliezer himself say such a thing? So you're telling me Rabbi Eliezer said that if he says shvur, that if he says shvur shaloi oichal, then he can use it, but if he says kikar zu a lie, meaning that he made a neder that the kikar is completely off limits to him, then he can't. And you're saying Rabbi Huna is saying the same thing, but Rabbi Eliezer himself, we find a different braisa where he says differently. V'hatanya, zaklal, the general rule is, adam oiser atzmei ba'oichal, if a person makes himself also to eat a certain kind of food, namely where he said shvua shaloy echlena, then ma'arvin loyba, then you can still make an eru for him with it. Oichal haneso loy la'odam, but if the food is also to the person, so he said the food is also to me, then ein ma'arvin loyba, then you can't make an eru for him with it, because then the object itself is also to him for all purposes. But Rabbi Yezer Omer, kikazu alai ma'arvin loyba. No, he says kikazu alai, you still could make an eru, because even though he said kikazu, nevertheless, he only means to answer the normal kind of hana from it, or because mitzvah slav lahonis, and therefore we don't care about the hana he's getting. But kikazu hektish ein ma'arvin loyba, only if he says that his bread is hektish, then you can't make an eruv with it. Lafisha ein ma'arvin loyba hektish, because you can't make an eruv with hektish, because hektish you can't use for any purpose. So we see Rabbi Eliezer is making a distinction not between a neder, not between a shvua and a neder, but between a neder or shvua on the one hand and a hektish on the other hand. Which is not like Rabbi Huna says. The answer is Trei Tanoim about Libid Rabbi Eliezer. The answer is there are two Tanoim arguing what Rabbi Eliezer held. So we have one version of what Rabbi Eliezer held, which is what Rabbi Huna is following. Okay. Again, Tosfos mentions that Tosfos mentions the distinction that when we say Ein Ma'arvin Loiba, we could be talking about specifically. We could be talking about a specific kind of neder called a koinam, which is where you're declaring the thing to be like hektish. So therefore, it's very easily confused with hektish, and therefore you couldn't use it. But other kinds of shavuos and other kinds of nedarim, maybe you could. The actual halacha that Amman brings, the halacha is indeed like the second version of Rabbi Eliezer, that if you say harei olai or kikazu or whatever, you're still able to use it. You're still able to use it only if you say that it's hektish, then you can. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, ma'arvin l'nazir b'yayin chula. We said for a nazir, you can make an eruv of tchumin using wine, even though he can't eat it. Even though he can't eat it, and we had in the Mishnah. So we had like this. In the Mishnah, we said for a Nazir, you can use wine. For a Yisrael, you can use truma. And Sumchus argued and said that you have to use cholin. So, first of all, the Gemara says, Masnisin deloike b'shamai. You should know that our Mishnah is not like b'shamai. You should know that there's a machloikus b'shamai and b'shilol on this subject. The Tanya, b'shamai, I mean, ein ma'arvin l'nozav yayin l'yisrael b'truma. B'shamai says, you can't do this. B'shilol, I'm ma'arvin l'nozav yayin l'yisrael b'truma. And b'shilol says, you could. As usual, of course, the halacha is like b'shilol. Amr lahen b'shilol b'shamai. So the Braisa continues with a discussion. That Bishilol says to Bishamai, why are you saying that a Nazir can't use wine or a Yisroel can't use truma? E atem moedim, don't you agree shema'arvin legodor b'yom kippurim that you're able to make an eruv for an adult on Yom Kippur? Now the adult himself is not able to eat on Yom Kippur, so it's not a suda haru'uya for him or for anybody else. It's only suitable to give to a kid who's below bar mitzvah age, and you still see that you could do that. Amru lahen aval. So Bishamai says, indeed, that's true. Amru lahen. So Bishilol argues, ikshashem shema arvin legodo b'yom kippurim. So the same way as you're able to make an eruv for an adult on Yom Kippur, even though neither they nor any other adult is going to be able to eat it. Kach ma arvin la nazir b'yayin l'yisrael b'truma. The same thing, you should be able to use wine for a nazir or truma for a Yisrael. So even though they themselves can't eat it, somebody else could eat it. By the way, in this connection, there's a machloikas of Rishonim. We say that you're not allowed to give a child an isur to eat. Does that apply to isurim drabanan as well? So one of the Gemaras that comes into that is over here. We're saying after all, the surda has to be suitable for somebody to eat. So the question is it considered suitable for a child to eat? That would depend on the question of whether you can give them something which is also drabanan. Well, as a kid may or may not have to eat on Yom Kippur, but the question is over here: do we need that this eruv is that the eruv itself is something that somebody else, namely the child, is going to be able to eat? Yeah. We're going to get into that point. We're going to get into that point now. So the question, Obis Shammai. So what would Bis Shammai answer to that? So why is there why do they agree that you can make an Eruv for Yom Kippur, but you can't make an Eruv using wine for a Nazir? The difference is Hosim Ika Suda Haru'uyam Ibaudyoim, because there at least it is a Suda, was suitable to eat before Yom Kippur begins. Hocha Laka Suda Haru'uyam Ibaudyoim, whereas when it comes to wine for a Nazir, he can't eat it even Ibaudyoim. Now, when we say Ibaudyoim, we're going to learn later on in the Perek,
We're going to learn later on in the Perek HaMachlokas, when does the Eruv actually take effect? When does it need to be intact and that it actually takes effect? Is it at the end of the day on Friday, or is it at the beginning of the day on Shabbos? So you would have a similar kind of thing. The Shammai necessarily would have to hold that it takes effect at the end of the day on Friday, or the end of the day on Erev Yom Kippur. Otherwise, if it takes effect only at the beginning of Yom Kippur, then it wouldn't work, because then you can't eat at that point. And even the Rashba points out, now you have a concept called Tosfos Yom Kippurim, that you have to stop eating a little bit before Shkia. But fine, then what we mean is the Eruv would take effect right before that time, right before the time when you have to take on the restrictions of Yom Kippur, one of which is not to go outside the Tchum. At that point is when the Shammai is saying when the Eruv would take effect. So it is Sudah Ru'ya at that point, which addresses your point. Yeah. Okay, fine. The Gemara says, Kaman, now who is this like? This whole discussion. So far, what are we saying? The Shammai agrees that you can use two meals worth of food for an Eruv. They're just arguing about, does it have to be food that's suitable for the person to eat right now, right before Shabbos or Yom Tov begins? So that would be Kaman Deloy Kehananya. That would not be like Hananya, who has a different version of what Beis Shammai held. The Tanya Hananya Omer Kol Asman Shabbos Shammai LeHayim Moedim BeEruv. Beis Shammai Bechlal did not agree with the whole concept of making an Eruv Tchumen using only food. Ad Sheyotzi Mitasil Chol Klei Tashmish of Lasham. According to Beis Shammai, you would have to actually take out before Shabbos your bed and everything else that you expect to need for Shabbos to the place that you want to make your home base for Shabbos. It wouldn't just be enough, according to Beis Shammai, to put down two meals worth of food. You'd actually have to bring in advance there everything that you plan to use on Shabbos. So according to Hananiah, there's nothing to talk about whether you can use wine for a nazir, etc., because then according to him, anyway, you have to bring everything of yours out there. Okay. Kaman Ozla Hodatanya, what about which of these opinions agrees with would be the author of the following braisa? Erev v'shchorim, if a person made an Eruv wearing black clothes. Now, besides all this time we're talking about an Eruv of food, there's another kind of Eruv Tchumen as well. You can also make an Eruv Tchumen called Beraglov. We're going to talk about it in more detail in the next paragraph. You can make an Eruv Tchumen by physically going to the end of, to the place that you want to make your home base and standing there throughout the entire Bein HaShemashes. And then that's also considered, it's called Ma'arav Beraglov. So now, so the Braisa is saying that if you went out to be Ma'arav Beraglov, you wearing black clothing, lo yetzib levonim, then the next day on Shabbos, you can't go out wearing a different outfit, a white outfit, or belevonim lo yetzib eshchorim, or vice versa. Kaman, who would that be like? Amar Rav Nachman, so Hanani, he bowed liberty of Beis Shammai. That would be according to Hananiah's version of Beis Shammai. Because again, according to Hananiah's understanding of Beis Shammai, you have to bring out before Shabbos all the things that you plan to use on Shabbos. So therefore, you expected that you're going to need a different, that you're going to use it, that you're going to wear a different outfit during the day on Shabbos, then you would have to have brought it there before Shabbos. So what does that mean? So what does that imply then? According to Hananya, if you walked over there wearing the white clothes, you'd be able to wear those same white clothes and go outside the tchum on Shabbos. What do you mean? Just wearing the clothes is not enough. We said, according to Hananya, you have to bring everything that you need for Shabbos, not just the outfit that you plan to wear. The answer is Hakikama. Eruv v'levonim v'chutzrach l'shchorim. What it means is, if the person made an Eruv, he did bring out his bed and all of his other clothes. He also was wearing black clothes, but then he was wearing white clothes. And then later on, he ended up needing black clothes after levonim l'yotze. Then he's not allowed to even wear the white clothes because he didn't bring out the clothes that he needs to wear later on Shabbos. Now the Rashba points out, we don't mean that there was something unexpected. If there was something unexpected, we don't require him to move his whole house there. After all, we only require him, according to Hananiah, to bring there the things that he expects to need over Shabbos. So if there was something completely unexpected, and because of that he needs a different outfit, then fine. Even Hananiah is going to agree that it's fine for him to change and wear something else. What we mean is that if at the beginning of Shabbos he knew that he's going to need two outfits, then he would have to bring both of them there before Shabbos. One that he's wearing, and the other one he would have to bring because he has to bring Kol Klei Tashmishrei. Okay. So then, who would that be like? Amar Rav Nachman, Hanani, Baal Libet, Beis Shammai. That would be according to Hanani. Nanya's understanding of Es Shammai, that you have to bring over there before Shabbos everything that you expect to need on Shabbos, and if not, then you can't use the Erev, then the Erev Tchumen does not even work at all because you didn't bring out, so therefore that's what we're saying. So when we say white versus black clothing, we don't mean that if you brought one white outfit, then you are able to afterwards on Shabbos wear a different white outfit. No, it means you would have to have brought all the outfits that you expect to wear that Shabbos and have to bring them there before Shabbos, according to Hananya. Okay, so it comes out basically that we have a few different opinions over here. We have, again, Hananya's version of Es Shammai, who's the most machmir. You have to bring everything to the spot before Shabbos. We have the regular version of Es Shammai, which is that you can use an Erev of a food or an Erev Beragla. You don't have to bring everything there before Shabbos, but it has to be food that you yourself can eat. We have Sumchus, which we're going to talk about. We'll get to it tomorrow at this point, Bez Hashem. That he says it has to be suitable for you, but as we're going to learn tomorrow, he learns that where you're able to be matu neder, then you're able to use it. So that would explain the case of the wine with the nazir, because you could be matu neder, and we'll see why that doesn't apply to truma. And then you have this Hillel, who says nothing of the above. You don't have to bring out all your stuff, and the meal itself, the two meals themselves, don't even have to be something that you yourself can eat. As long as another yid can eat it, then you're good. There are some Mefarshim, actually, who say that basically Bes Shammai would agree with Sumchus's point, but Bes Shammai holds, the Gemara mentions in Nazir, Bes Shammai holds, you cannot be Matur Neder for Nazirus. Because you have a whole concept called Hektish Tos, and Bes Shammai holds, and knows that Hektish Tos is still Hektish, and you can't be Matur Neder on it. So therefore, in effect, it comes out, they say the same thing as Sumchus, because a Nazir can't be Matur Neder, therefore it's also to him. As opposed to Sumchus would hold that you could be Matur Neder, and therefore he would say that a Nazir could use wine for his Erev. But we'll get to that point tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Okay.